Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good Friday morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today, TGIF, and thank God also that it's football season. I can't tell you. Anyway, so I have to apologize, do an apology first, that for those of you that may have missed yesterday's show, because I had some technical difficulties and still haven't gotten a link out to everybody, so I am getting the link out today. And the reason I want to apologize because there's information on there about tailgating and other football information or sports information, because we did do that show yesterday with Luke Lorick of tailgating also with our professor, Victor Matheson, from the College of the Holy Cross, our sports economist who usually is on. But we are actually going to turn to the guru of all things sports, and my boss, the mighty, mighty CEO of Never Had It So Good Entertainment, Princess Cooper, good morning.
That's high praise, Gretchen, guru of all things sports. That's high praise, but good morning. How are you?
I am well. I am blessed. And like I said, I just can't begin to tell you how happy I am that it's Friday and that, you know, this is my season. You know, this is the one I get into the most. So,
okay.
And you know, my team, Tampa. My team played. Mm-hmm. My team won. I didn't get a chance to really see, unfortunately. But I am actually going to watch the repeat, or at least part of it, which I don't normally do, because I'm like, what's the point? But I think I want to watch it. So, but did you get a chance to see it?
Oh, I watched the entire game, and I actually recorded it, DVR'd, so I'll watch it again and break it down. But I thought neither team disappointed, and it was going to be the last team with the ball, and that ended up, of course, being Tom Brady. And I had never been a Tom Brady fan, and I think that's the highest praise I can give him. I grew up a Dolphins fan, and he was in that division.
Yep.
With the New England Patriots. And but Tom Brady came down and did what he did, and I thought they got to give me call on an offensive pass interference that wasn't called. So I guess it is an interference that they didn't call it. But I was very, very, very proud of the performance of Dak Prescott. I hope that they can tamper him down some, though, because you can't throw 60 passes a game, and he threw 58. So it was an excellent, excellent game, entertaining game. If
good.
You asked one of them, then there were some four turnovers by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and one or two by the Cowboys, but a good game and promising for both. Brady did what he did. He was the last quarterback with the ball, and he took him down there, and they kicked a field goal. So
good. Made my day, made my weekend. I'm a happy girl. And God knows I need some of that right now.
You're
going to
need some because, you know, now tomorrow South Florida plays the Florida Gators. So you're going to need your happy pill today.
Yeah, that's okay. That's my team. I was at South Florida before they even had a team. So, yeah, I'm
that's
myself,
right.
But I don't care. That's my school. and so got to get on board. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of my team and that division, I'm sure you're aware that my hometown team, University of Central Florida,
is either attempting to or is or has made a switch in terms of conferences?
Well, you know, what has happened, Gretchen, is that Texas Longhorns and Oklahoma Sooners requested to leave the Big 12, and then the Big 12 said you had to pay $75 million apiece to do so, and both the Longhorns and the Sooners have done that, and they're projected to be out of there for the 2025 season, but it looks like it's going to be sooner than that. Most prognosticators have said they'd be surprised if they played in the Big 12 past the 2022nd or 2023rd. So that means that there have been an alliance with some of the Power 5 conferences, and the Big 12 are seeking to get additional teams, and Cincinnati and who else? UCF, BYU, and there's one more. They have showed interest in moving to the Big 12, so the process has started. But the process does not stop there. There has to be a vote by the other teams in the conference, and there has to be a majority of that vote for them to enter. But I think that's a good move for UCF. I think that's a good move for Big 12 to have a team in Florida and extend their playing in another state. And, of course, they're recruiting into another state, you know, in exposure. So UCF, yeah, I think that's a good move. It's not solid yet. It's not a done deal. But at least the process has started.
Yeah, I don't follow them as much or as well as I should, and I guess because I'm a little annoyed because our local sports coverage, and I'm going to put them on blast right now, our local sports coverage will cover every other team in the state except USF, trying to do that battle of the I-4 rivalry thing going, and they need to just be fair in coverage because there are a lot of USF alums here in the state, I mean, in Central Florida, in the Orlando area. And so,
well, Gretchen,
I think that may have to do with
local exposure or local TV, and you have to have a sellout crowd at your stadium before you then show it locally. I still think
I'm not even talking about showing
play.
The game. I'm not talking about showing the game. I'm talking about when they do sports coverage on the news. They will talk about every other team but University of South Florida. They will talk about Florida, Florida State, FAMU, BCC, Miami Hurricanes. They'll talk about some sort of dog rivalry or something before they will talk about USF. So I'm just calling them out on it. It's not fair. They need to, you know, they're supposed to do coverage. I mean, Tallahassee's 4 hours away. Tampa's about an hour or so away.
Well, I also think that people love a winner, and they love the bigger programs that'll give them the biggest exposure. And if you're thinking about it in those aspects, South Florida has struggled, you know, post Willie Taggart and also Skip Holtz, if I'm not for sure. I think that was it. You know, they have struggled. And then FSU has struggled, but it's still within that Power 5. So, you know, you're in Orlando, and I bet you if you went to that Tampa market, though, they're getting a lot of exposure. But you have to really pick and choose when you have 11 minutes to broadcast with two commercials, which you know about this for sure, in broadcasting.
Yes.
You have to pick and choose what your topics are going to be. But from a true alum of USF, carry the torch and make a difference. I agree.
Oh,
with you.
Every year I'm usually emailing those people, you know. So I'm still working on it, but they need to get their house in order, you know, because you can give up 15 seconds. I know this because I have worked in. I was a TV news producer, so I know
that's
this.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay.
So now, what are your thoughts in terms of this year? Do we see a repeat of Tampa being the Super Bowl champ because of Brady, or what are we looking at? And then what about Patrick Mahomes?
Well, you know, they're in two different conferences, so with Tampa Bay being in the NFC South, and Patrick Mahomes being in the AFC West, if I'm not mistaken, then, you know, they can meet in the Super Bowl again. So they can't impede each other from getting there, but they could meet in the Super Bowl. And I just don't know how you go against a team like the Buccaneers, who did not lose any of their main players at all to free agency. Everybody returned that they needed to return, and they looked good last night. And I thought Antonio Brown from the Pittsburgh Steelers by way of the Patriots and the Raiders, he really turned the corner. He really turned the corner and looked solid last night, along with Gronk, who now Brady and Gronk now have 100 TDs amongst the two of them, which is second in the league in history. So I don't think you can bet against the Buccaneers being there again in the mix, if not winning the NFC. And my pick in the AFC is Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. So it could be a repeat of the Super Bowl, and that's what I'm saying right now at this stage when the season just begun last night.
Right, right. And where is the Super Bowl this year?
I have no clue. I want to say it's out west. It was at Tampa last year. I want to say it's out
right.
west. Arizona or in California.
Year.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I don't remember. I was hoping that you did NASA because.
That's okay. That's okay. I know we've got a few months. And then also with regards to college, because I know you are really, you have more of a mindset with regards to that. What are you seeing? Who looks good?
Well, here we are in 2021, where there was not a whole lot of people in the stadium in college football in 2020, and I'm happy to see that come back. But you know, I love anything college football, and I'm just like the young man you had on yesterday to talk about tailgating. When college football is in season, that means the NFL is not far behind. That means that Major League Baseball is coming up on the playoffs, and the NBA is about to start its season. So it's a wonderful time of the year. But back to college football, what am I seeing? Alabama has reloaded after, you know, losing six players in the NFL draft in the first round, and I think 11, 12 altogether. They have reloaded, and I think they're the number one team. Georgia beat Clemson this past weekend, and I think they have that solid number two for the moment. But the SEC will eat each other up, and we'll see. But Clemson didn't do well. Neither team, Georgia or Clemson, scored an offensive touchdown. But, you know, right now, the fact that college football is here is an awesome thing. I thought Ohio State did what it needed to do against Minnesota. They look well. So there are a lot of teams. Notre Dame went into FSU and took care of them, but FSU looked good, and I think college football is better when FSU does look good. You know, the ACC took a really bad hit over the weekend. They had some bad losses in that conference, but college football is back, and Alabama is still the team to beat in college football.
You know, you're kind of right. I was thinking when you were talking about the time of year with the sport, all of the sports and everything, and I started to think about the Christmas song. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, it is.
I think this is another component that you can add to it. This is these next 4 months are just really a great time to you know, just enjoy life, you know, between the sports and the holidays. I think it's just really wonderful. So,
and the Super Bowl on February 13th, 2022 is in California, Inglewood Stadium. So it is in California, so it is out west.
Yeah, the other Sunshine State, I guess you could say, so to speak.
Yes. Yes.
I just, my thing with them, I'm with everything that they're going through out in the west, I just hope that, you know, everything will be closer to normal. I was, you know, talking to someone yesterday. They were kind of up north with all of the fires and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just awful. We got to keep them in prayer. But anyway, you know, you could make me listen to sports more, especially college. I was just listening. I'm like, I need to actually turn on the TV and watch some college football. So, but anyway,
please do. I this time of season, I stopped going to the mall, and I'm all in with college football from 12 noon. I try to run all my errands before then, 12 noon mm-hmm. until 12 midnight. But we have some great shows on, Gretchen. Before I go, you know, I have
okay.
a new show with Brittany Jones. She is located in Newark, New Jersey. But we do a show on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. called She Knows Sports with Brittany and Princess. It's an excellent show. So check it out if you can on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. But we also have Sports Talk Atlanta on Tuesdays, Sports Talk New Jersey on Wednesdays, and then on Thursdays we feature an athlete in college or the pros or high school, the Athlete Spotlight. I do that show with a running back legend with West Virginia, David Duck Riley, so at 7 p.m. But every night, Monday night, we have some former GMs of the NFL on Monday nights at 7 p.m., and we talk sports. So every night at 7 p.m., we're Never Had It So Good. We are live, loaded, and ready, and we give it to you straight with no chaser. So make sure you know you check it out. Check it out, okay?
You have got to get me a list to post on the G's Power Hour Facebook page so that everybody can know where to go. So you got to get me that. All right?
I can do that.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have the man, the civil rights attorney of the hour and plus, Kevin Anderson, who's going to catch us up on some cases and some incidents. And, you know, don't be afraid to give us a call and ask questions or give comments. The number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today, and thank you, the mighty, mighty Princess Cooper of Never Had It So Good Entertainment, to give us an update on all things sports, including my teams. And we're going to catch up with Princess later on in the season to see where things stand. In the meantime, Mr. Kevin Anderson, civil rights attorney extraordinaire, is with us this morning. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Gretchen. How are you?
I am well, always excited to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little sleepy. I stayed awake last night to watch Tampa squeak by the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really competitive game. You two ladies should change your day jobs to sports commentators, because, man, I listened and I just thought, wow, you guys know more about sports than a lot of people have forgotten.
She is. She actually does that. Okay, that's part of what she does. Me, I'm just along for the ride.
Oh, no, you were talking. You guys, it was good. The exchange was really, really good, you know, the comment about Notre Dame handling Florida State. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame won the game. Let's say that they won the contest. I don't think Florida State got handled though. So let me put that out there as a FSU alum.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. There you go.
Okay.
There you go. Putting it out there. And, but no, right. I thought the game last night was interesting for sure. I think Dallas probably would have won if they had made that field goal and that extra point that they missed. And, you know, but, you know, that's how it goes, man. That's, you know, you play for the whole four quarters, not just for any one or two particular plays. So you got to stay on it, man. Yeah.
Right. And the other thing I keep wanting to remind people that, yeah, there are some very extraordinary players, but it is a team sport. You know, there are other people that need to get recognition because they are playing just as hard, you know. And in some cases, as I mentioned yesterday when we were talking, and, you know, we were talking about certain people that enable the quarterback and other people to do their job. It's a team sport, you know, because if Brady wasn't getting protection and stuff like that, you know, how's he going to get down the field? You know, how's he going to get the ball down the field? Okay.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. You know, receiver Brown, Evans, you know, Gronk, those guys were just butter. You know, they weren't missing anything. They did a great job. And what's his name, Leonard Fournette? That guy, you know, he did his job too. So that entire squad, I am proud of that the Bucs have gelled as an organization, and they're representing the state, and they're really doing a great job.
Yeah. Hey, Gretchen, I have to interject here, being a Florida Gator, alum. Speaking of FSU alum, I give FSU credit. That was a game, and it could have gone the other way. Another 5 minutes, FSU could have taken that game. There were some bad calls on both sides, but I did say, attorney, I think that college football is better when FSU is better, and I surely hope they're turning the corner.
Well, thank you, and you did say that.
Okay, Attorney Anderson, I'll turn it back over. Sorry, Gretchen.
I'm just saying, go Bulls. That's all I'm saying, okay? I don't care about y'all. Anyway. Okay, so where are we starting this morning? Because you know there is one case I do want to discuss. Well, a couple of cases, actually. But where do we want to start this morning?
Well, the magnificent seven that we had earlier kind of kept our eye on, I'm sorry, the Martinville 7, not the Magnificent 7, the Martinville 7, with respect to clemency, that finally, you know, posthumously was granted to those guys. You know, so I think, you know, we want to start talking about, you know, some of the things that are happening around us as far as the executive branch making some decisions about reversing jury verdicts and things that have left entire generations and families just like reeling when it comes to judicial decisions. So recently there were seven black men who in the 50s, they were convicted of raping a white woman in Virginia. These guys, they did allegedly confess, but the confessions were really not confessions. They were contrived, and in fact, some of the men, they couldn't read. They were illiterate. They had no lawyers during the questioning. They were under immense duress during the questioning as well, and also there was a mob mentality and a mob presence outside of the areas where the police had the men in custody. They went to trial. The trial consisted of an all-white jury. They were hastily convicted, and then all of them executed. About, I think, four were executed in one day, and the very next day, three were executed. We're talking like seven people being executed at pretty much the same time. Recently, the governor of Virginia posthumously pardoned these men. But when he pardoned them, he said that, you know, he wasn't addressing the guilt, but rather the lack of due process pertaining to them. And that while they're exonerated, it fell short mm-hmm. of acknowledging that they were truly innocent. So I want to start with that because, you know, I'm a little troubled by not giving us a full-throated exoneration for what did not get proven in court. The last time I looked, not proven means not guilty. And if you're not guilty, then the presumption of innocence still remains with you. And that's just that. Okay. So I got a problem with letting people go and just kind of mm-hmm. saying, hey, I'm giving you a pass, but like, you know, I'm not saying you didn't do it. I'm just letting you slide, that kind of thing, you know, because the process itself was tainted. So the group is touted as the Martinville Seven. And, mm-hmm. you know, earlier, I think I called them the Magnificent Seven. But what do you think about that, G? You know, do you think that just letting the family kind of enjoy or at least receive the news of an exoneration, you think that's enough? Or do you think that the government should just kind of fall on the knife, you know?
Yeah, No. I mean, I think that's playing it safe for the person, you know, and this is not the first time that something like this has happened. And I think you and I have talked about just the fact that, okay, you pardon these people, they are dead. Okay. And probably the generation that came after them might possibly, either be dead or, you know, just very, you know, old and probably just don't have either the resources or manpower or support to kind of, you know, follow this up and appeal, you know. So I feel like you've just gotten away with a wrong, you know. This is lip service. I think we talked about that, you know. And this is one of those cases. I think you were saying that this is kind of an example of how reparations come into play. I think when we talked about this before,
sure. The underpinning of a civil rights action is in part based on what happens to the substantive case. And in a case like the Martinville 7, if you've got the governor exercising discretionary clemency, you know, on the one hand, and in doing so, the governor says, well, I'm not addressing the guilt. I'm just kind of letting them go because the process was no good. What have you done to now paved the way for the family to seek some form of redress, you know, because you really haven't given us a full-throated pardon. What you've done is just kind of conditionally let the people go in the minds of the family, but you haven't really laid the foundation for there to be further work on behalf of restoration as far as any type of reparations are concerned or any civil rights action to speak of without a lot of work to be done. So I agree with you. And you know, posthumously exoneration of a person is, you know, on the one hand, you're clearing the person's name, you know, but they're dead, you know, and the family is able to see that now after all these years, you know, my loved mm-hmm. one has been you know, cleared of whatever they've been accused of. And I think there was a photo that was published, and you see the children and the other relatives just breaking mm-hmm. down and weeping. Years, mm-hmm. like 70 years later. I mean, they're crying as if it happened yesterday. You know, I mean, just think about if your dad or your grandpa, you know, mm-hmm. was executed by electrocution. And think mm-hmm. about that, you know, just how startling, you know, that is to think about the pain that the person went through, the anxiety that they experienced leading up to the execution. And then to all these years, you know, for everybody to kind of, you know, think that this is what your relative did in order to receive this horrible sanction. And out of the blue one day, then a governor says, you know, well, I'm not saying I didn't do it. I'm just letting them go. I'm just letting them go. Mm-hmm. That's like, okay, I hear you, man. You know,
but,
you know.
And it's, but, you know, like you say, 70 years down the road, what prompted this? Why? I mean, and like I said, what good is it going to do? And my thing is, in my heart, as a relative,
you know, you're not telling me anything. I don't know. And the people that are around today are saying, okay, so what's this got to do with me? Okay. There's
exactly.
There's got to be some sort of we're going to have either, you know, and not saying that this is going to do a whole lot either, but we've got to have some sort of commission or task force or something to look at this case and cases like these and find out what is the best form of justice for a case that's been out of the limelight and the people are gone and the relatives, you know, it's a personal matter to them. How do we get the rest of the community to care and to make sure that history does not repeat itself?
I think that is one of the goals of a posthumous or even a living pardon or exercise of clemency that's shy of a full pardon, in order to emphasize the miscarriage of justice and also to establish a line in the sand so that from a precedence standpoint, we understand that now we're never going to do what happened again. Like we're making this public edict that, you know, what has occurred was wrong, and the way we did it should never, ever be repeated again. I want to answer your question, though, about, you know, the governor all of a sudden, you know, doing or at least exercising this discretionary clemency on the Martinville 7. This governor was the same governor who was involved in that racist and offensive blackface scandal a couple of years ago. This is Governor Ralph Northam from Virginia. If you recall, some photographs surfaced where he had, I believe, black shoe polish on his face. And he actually, you know, he denied it at first, and then eventually, mm-hmm. you know, he admitted that, yeah, that might be me. I guess it was me. I did not kind of, you know, mean any harm by it. You know, just sort of wiggled and squirmed and stuff. So, you know, now he managed mm-hmm. to stay in office, but mm-hmm. you know, he's in Virginia, and Virginia's blue. It's a blue state now. And there are people who like the things that he's doing there. I'm from Virginia, by the way. Okay, that's my home state. So I'm
learning so much about you today.
Yes, man. I'm from Virginia, man. So I followed that, you know, and I still, you know, catch news out of that area. But so I don't think that he just somebody just put that on his desk and he decided to check a box.
Right.
I think that there's something else going on, you know, because these guys have been convicted wrongfully for 70 years. It just didn't occur to you, like, in a dream, you know, that, like, hey, man, I think I need to let these guys, you know, have their names cleared, even though they're not around anymore. No, I think something else prompted the pardon in that particular case. But, you know, speaking of Virginia, do you remember of the clemency that was granted to a fellow by the name of Allen Iverson, the basketball mm-hmm. player? Come on, the ladies,
yeah.
You guys are talking sports, so here we go.
Yeah, I know. I told you I'm on the fringes, but yeah, I think I do.
Okay, all right. Allen Iverson, he was a teenager, a basketball, and actually a football player. A lot of people don't know that, for Hampton High School in Virginia. I'm from the Hampton Roads area, so I was very familiar with what happened, and I followed it when he was accused of being present during a mob-like debacle. Black students, white students in a bowling alley. The charge specifically was maiming. Someone was seriously hurt when a chair was thrown. Essentially, he was arrested along with some of the other men who were present, and he ultimately was convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison. And because the evidence was questionable, which was used to convict him, the governor, then Governor Wilder, the first black governor in Virginia, he didn't pardon Allen Iverson. What he did was he granted conditional clemency, which released Allen from prison and gave him certain requirements while the appellate court reviewed the conviction. And then ultimately, the appellate court overturned the conviction, and that's what exonerated him. So that is another form of clemency that kind of happens to allow justice to be carried out later after the fact. So I just wanted to put that out there since we were talking about Virginia, we're talking about sports. So it just it was something that, I wanted to mention as well.
Okay. We are going to take a quick break. And the cases that we were just talking about, the Martinsville 7 and also the recall of the Allen Iverson case, posting those on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson, and if you have questions for him, the number is 516-387-1944. When we come back, my turn, we're going to talk about something that's been bothering me. This is in regards to the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had a So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had a So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. By the way, if you think that you tuned in early, you did, or late, you actually did kind of sort of tune in late because we started the show a half hour early today because there were things that I needed to talk about with Princess Cooper of Never Had a So Good Entertainment and with Kevin Anderson, who's on now, civil rights attorney. We were just talking about Martinsville 7 and also made a reference to the Allen Iverson case back in, I think it's 1993. I want to talk about the development with Ahmaud Arbery case. For those of you that don't know, and I'm going to be posting stuff on that as well, you know, the young man was shot running down the street by by two men. It was a father and son. I think one was a former police officer anyway. I think it said a couple of days ago, there was an indictment of the former Georgia district attorney charged with obstructing in the Ahmaud Arbery case. And then, she was booked, I guess, yesterday or something like that. But anyway, so what is it that this ex-prosecutor is accused of really doing in this case? And why is this case dragging? That's what I want to know.
There was an indictment against the prosecutor. Her name is Jackie Johnson. She was charged with one count of violating her oath of office, which is a felony count, and a second count, which is hindering law enforcement, which is a misdemeanor. essentially an obstruction charge. And what she did was she directed the investigating officers in the death of Mr. Aubrey to not arrest the two suspects, who one of whom shot and killed Mr. Aubrey. And then there was a third person who was kind of riding in tow and filming this episode, which I believe is a co-conspirator.
Right.
So she basically blocked for them, and she tried to bury the investigation and any subsequent charges that could have emerged from that investigation. She deliberately attempted to ice over what happened and would have gotten away with her activity but for video. And it's a travesty, because this is a one of our sentinels of justice, a person who has immunity against the lawsuits from police liability practitioners, for the most part, except where the most egregious activity takes place in her office as prosecutor. It's rare, by the way, for a lawyer, a plaintiff's lawyer, to file a civil claim against a prosecutor, and even more rare for that claim to survive a motion to dismiss in federal or in state court. They have pretty much absolute immunity, so that they can do their jobs. Think of one right now, I believe the Duke lacrosse team prosecutor, who he really took it all the way. You know, he was sued, and he was actually arrested for his deliberate actions in trying to charge those men for a sexual battery against a young lady years and years and years ago. But in Georgia, this case seems to be dragging. There is a trial date set. There is a trial date set, and it's early next year. So, you know, the wheels of justice are grinding. They just, they grind at horse and buggy speed. You know, it seems like the rest of the world is moving at a jet pace. But, you know, the wheels of justice just sort of eke along and eke along. And justice delayed is justice denied. You know, quite frankly, because, you know, this man was gunned down like a dog. And we saw it. And not only did we see it, you know, we felt it at a time when, you know, emotions were running really high. The country was, you know, trying to, you know, to get on its feet and to refrain from staggering because of a whole bunch of things that were happening with respect to social justice. And then this is published, you know. So I think it's important for justice to be swift. It's particularly where it involves a homicide and where there is overwhelming evidence to support a prosecution for that homicide. You know, think about the George Floyd matter. You know, I mean, you know, Derek Chauvin, that guy, he went to trial pretty quickly and was convicted. And the civil case concluded, and he was sentenced, and he's doing his time. And it's meaningful when you are able to exact justice at or near the time of the activity. It's when you actually are still hurting and reeling and trying to recover when you get this dose of salve, this bomb, so to speak, that heals you. You know, as opposed to, like, exactly, you know, having a scab, and now you're giving me some lotion. You know, really? You're going to give me some lotion? You know, I'm all scabbed over now. I'm healed, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I don't need the lotion now. I needed it when the wound was open. So, you know, I don't I haven't actually pulled the investigative file from her case. I will, because I'm going to follow that.
I know you will.
And it's important. It's important, you know, for guys like me to make some noise about it, you know, because when we make noise, that's when people listen. You know, if we sit back in the cut and we allow things to happen to us, we're never going to get the justice that we deserve. Nobody's going to just give it to you. So, you know, the Black Lives Matters movement, hey, listen, you know, but for that momentum and but for people getting behind the move, and, you know, doing what they could when they could. I don't know that a lot of the progress that we've made within the past 2 years would have been made. I'm not so sure about that. How about you, G? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I want to ask you something before we get too far along in terms of the video and the person who shot the video, releasing the video, but he's also being, you know, indicted.
Yeah.
What do you think prompted him to release his video? I mean, did he really not think that he was going to get caught up in this?
I don't know. I don't know that he released the video as much as it being taken from him. I think that it was disclosed that a video existed, and
well, who would
the
have
video
disclosed it?
Well,
I don't think the three of them would have disclosed it unless he
I'm
was
not so sure about
growing
that.
A conscience.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about that. I think that the prosecutor, now the prosecutor was involved in the investigation, so there is a possibility that at some point during the investigation that one of the officers documented his presence. And, you know, the question would be like, well, why are you driving behind these guys, you know, when this altercation took place? Doesn't it seem a little, you know, like organized? Like, what were you doing back there? And his response mm-hmm. may have been, well, I saw it happen. And, you know, and I was, yeah, I did film it. He may have under pressure said something that alerted authorities to the existence of the video. Excuse me. You've seen the show America's, you know, Dumbest Criminals, you know, people do stupid stuff under pressure. You know, they confess to crimes. They, you know, yeah, come on in. You can look around. I don't have nothing to hide. Knowing full well there's like a dead body in your closet, you know. You know, happens all the time. Sure, you can take my DNA. I don't need a lawyer. Go ahead. And they open their mouth up like they're getting some castor oil, and boom, man, they get swabbed, and yep, lo and behold, it's you. You know, stuff. I mean, they leave their wallets at rape scenes, you know. I mean, I see some really crazy stuff. Bloody shoe prints, you know, they're walking around the house. I had a guy eat some food and at a person's house, and he left like the plate and, you know, the utensils that he ate from at the house after breaking in, you know. Like, come on, man, you're just asking to, you know, to be caught. So I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. So, going to take another quick break, and then when we come back, it's your turn. What do you want to talk about next?
Nikita Brown. That's what I'm going to talk about.
All right, so that's what we're going to talk about next. And don't forget, if you have questions, comments, whatever, the number is 516-387-1944. We've got more time with Mr. And not just a little bit. We got a little bit more than usual time with Kevin Anderson, civil rights attorney here in West Central Florida, East South Central Florida. See, I'm getting old. Don't know my directions. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison, and I think I found a way to help you understand what is Chill Out Jazz.
Some of y'all may be confused because of the style we choose. We make jazz and R&B. We don't categorize. We just make what sound good, baby. Is it jazz?
It is what it is.
Is it R&B?
Tune in every Wednesday night at 10 on KHAM Radio.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I am here with civil rights attorney Kevin Brown, and we are talking about some of the cases that have been, I guess, in the news some more recent than others. Some have been updated, and some just saw this yesterday. Another case of just living while black, in this case, walking the dog while black. And I saw this on Good Morning America with the officer encountering this woman while she's walking her dog. So talk about this, Kevin.
You're excited, man. Her name was Nikita Brown. You referred to me as Kevin Brown. I know you're fired up, man. You're fired up. I can.
I'm fired up too.
I know. I'm with you, man. She was in Chicago, Chicago suburb, walking her dog. And apparently, the park that where she walked her dog was closed, and she noticed a police officer drive up near her and who began to follow her. So there were other people in the park. Now, Miss Brown is black. And, you know, the officer in question is a white
officer.
It's
her little dog, because it wasn't a big dog. And, it was just a little dog.
And she's got, I mean, it looks like a Benji or something, or, you know, it looks like a throw rug or something. The dog is just like peeny. You know, you know what? Maybe like a pug or something. But, you know, so the officer got out of his car, began to walk behind her, and then he put his hands on her. He actually grabbed her and tried to restrain her, and apparently he was attempting to place her on the ground, but forcibly so. And she wouldn't allow this police officer to manhandle her under the circumstances, and I don't blame her. Eventually, she was able to stop his activity, but, you know, this was a clear attempt by law enforcement, I believe, to interfere with her right to be left alone. This appeared to be a false imprisonment case and potentially a excessive force case, because he didn't have probable cause to detain her with force. And in excessive force cases, even if you have no probable cause, even de minimis force is excessive. You know, now I don't think she's hurt, but, you know, he placed his hands on her and he wrestled with her, and that's enough.
Yeah.
That establishes a prima facie case of excessive force. And he did restrict her free movement and her free liberty. So, therefore, a prima facie case of false imprisonment exists as well. At this point, there was no reason that I see on the video, and I haven't heard anything from the agency, and it was the Chicago Police Department, which would have justified his detention and action during the detention against Ms. Brown. So things are being investigated, and we'll see. We'll just follow the case along. But this is a relatively new case that's been floating around. It just came out, I believe, over the past 24 hours, that the disclosure of the activity.
Yeah.
The case happened on, or the event happened August 28th, though.
Yeah, but that was just, week before last, something like that, last week? I mean, what's interesting, while I was looking up information, because I saw it yesterday morning, it freaked me out, because, you know, I was watching Good Morning America, and it was on there, and it aggravated me, to say the least. But the interesting thing is, while I was trying to look up information on this incident, I came across, there's a movie, a short called Walking the Dog While Black. It's from 2018. A woman goes out one night to walk her dog and has a terrifying encounter with the police. Talk about life imitating art. Art was imitating life previously. But anyway, I did post that link on the Deep Power Hour Facebook page. And first I was like, what? You know, but yeah, 2018, a few years ago, that there's a short movie on this, Walking a Dog While Black. So,
the placing of one's hands on a citizen is serious. coming up to a person and questioning a citizen by law enforcement is not as serious as actually placing your hands on a person. When you touch an individual, that is something which needs to be preceded with enough probable cause associated with an arrest. This is not, you know, one of those scenarios where you just kind of get to just go up and to grab a person and to just hold them until they give you an answer or, you know, they speak to you. I full on support a investigation against this officer, and I can very well see the filing of a complaint for excessive force and false imprisonment. You know, which brings me to something that I was looking at that happened in Osceola with a student, I believe. Apparently, I guess there was a student who was slammed to the ground at a school in Osceola, I believe Liberty High School. That's in your neck of the woods, man. Someone contacted me from that area and asked me to take a look at that. And I got the video, and I thought, what the heck is going on in Osceola? You know?
Yeah.
But, apparently the school police officer approached this young lady, and he grabbed her and took her to the ground. Her head struck the sidewalk, and he was attempting to, I guess, handcuff her. Eventually, when she, you know, just kind of stopped moving on the ground, he handcuffed her, and she apparently lost consciousness that she hit the ground so hard.
She's laying there. And her head hit the ground, and she was out. This girl was out. And I still wonder that what kind of head trauma that she may have suffered that may haunt her the rest of her life. But this, you know, they just brushed this off, you know.
I guess there was a fight in progress between her and another student, or at least getting ready to take place. And the police officer was trying to intervene, and she was a little hot and heated, and so he continued his efforts to stop the aggression from either happening to her or from her. But ultimately, the state attorney looked at the case and elected not to file charges against this officer. And it doesn't mean that a civil suit could not now take place, but for whatever reason, the decision was made to forego a prosecution in that particular case. So I just thought I'd bring that up because it was definitely something that was brought to my attention, certainly made the media in Central Florida, and I think it's of interest to your listeners, you know. I'm keeping my eye on it to see what happens in that particular case.
Good. Yeah, because I think that one of the things that – and I think these school resource officers – And I can't speak to this totally, but I do know one, and I guess I should ask him. But I think they don't come necessarily with the training in terms of handling teenagers, which we all know, having been one and encountering with teenagers, that's a totally different animal, you know.
Yeah.
it's because they're in the process of trying to figure out a lot of stuff and are in transition. There's a lot of expectation, you know, you're not a child anymore, but you're not an adult yet. And you know, you've got to figure out basically how to handle a teenager. And, yes, this wasn't a small chick, you know, or anything like that. Still didn't deserve to have her head hit the ground like that. And I am so, so worried thing that might have happened because we all know, too, that at that age – you know, brain and everything else is still not fully formed, you know. So what type of damage have you done to this young woman before she even has a chance to fully mature? And I really think that we need to deal with the school resource officers in terms of how they deal with teenagers. They've got to remember these are teenagers. These are not adults. And yes, they are, you know, hormones are racing and all kind of stuff, but you need to know this and know how to address it before you get pushed into a school resource officer position.
Well, but on the other hand, you know, you are dealing with younger people who aren't mature enough to exercise self-control oftentimes.
Right.
And sometimes they're making these irrational choices, bringing
right.
weapons to school. And, you know, as a resource officer, if you didn't intervene, and let's say this girl attacked the student and hurt her seriously or killed her, then
mm-hmm.
we'd be, you know, crying bloody murder. You know, why didn't he take her to the ground? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? It's like you're damned if you do or damned if you don't. You know, the officer,
yeah.
I believe, was in Chicago who stopped the fight and wound up shooting the young lady. Remember that one recently? You know, where
yeah.
there was the knife? Yeah, okay. So, you know, now
yeah.
there's the other extreme, you know. So what, you know, it's a tough, tough job, you know, these officers
mm-hmm.
have out there. You know, when they're, you know, we're second-guessing them having, you know, the opportunity now to break down film and talk to the Kevin Andersons and, you know, but, you know, these guys are there, man. It's happening at the heat of the moment, you know, and they're, you know, they have to make a split second decision. And the courts are really, really conservative when it comes to allowing the officers to be prosecuted or to even be sued with respect to an incident where qualified immunity kicks in because of that, you know, arguable probable cause standard. And because of this, you know, this flash point that these officers are now dealing with in a highly fluid situation.
We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, Kevin, I'm going to ask you a basic question because the phrase civil rights gets kind of just tossed around willy-nilly. And I
yeah.
really want to break down what are civil rights, you know, how have they been established, you know, and when are they really violated? So I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So I am here with Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch. He's an attorney in South Central Florida. This is D's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. D's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time, and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon, Friday afternoon, amen. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. So the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management, there's a piece called Legal Highlight, the Civil Rights, 1964. And according to this, and I've posted it on G's Power Hour Facebook page, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Provisions of this Civil Rights Act forbade discrimination on the basis of sex as well as race in hiring, promotion, promoting and firing. The act prohibited discrimination in public accommodations and federally funded programs, and it also strengthened the enforcement of voting rights and the desegregation of schools. So I'm here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson, and I wanted to ask, do people really know what they are saying when they talk about my civil rights are being violated? Because to me, it seems like there are cases where this has been kind of blown out of proportion. So can you talk a little bit about that for me, please?
People are lumping their constitutional rights into the civil rights context when they make that statement.
Okay.
You know, you are going to have to be an attorney, and an attorney who focuses on constitutional law for the most part, in order to articulate all of the civil rights and the provisions which are attached to those rights in a manner that's going to be understandable and correct. So most people don't accurately recite the civil rights coverage, but you actually addressed quite a few of those rights which fall under the Civil Rights of 1964 Act. And we mm-hmm. do deal with housing, age, sex, religion, expression, voting, and police liability, meaning excessive force, false arrest, that kind of thing. but you do have from time to time these conversations with folks who will just blurt out, "Hey, my civil rights were violated," and you're kind of standing there going like, "Okay, which one are you talking about, man?" You know, so I get phone calls all the time when it comes to employment. That's a big one too. Labor is a big one, you know. I have a cadre of lawyers who focus on each of those respective areas. You know, I only deal with the police liability context of civil rights, which is codified mm-hmm. under Section 42, the United States Code, 1983. There are other colleagues that I have who focus on labor. And there's some who focus on voting rights, which is really big right now, the voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
And expression, you know, meaning, you know, the right to assemble, the freedom of speech. That's
yes,
a big deal.
Speaking of
right
that.
There are lawyers who yes. do nothing but that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, didn't they just recently, the one in Florida that the governor was trying to enforce, didn't a judge just recently overturn that or say that?
Well, that's under review, so it's
yeah.
not
okay.
You know, it's not a done deal yet. But it looks like his policies and his orders are being chipped away at. And actually, that's a statute, so it looks like that statute is being considered for its constitutionality. There are quite a few cracks and crevices in
mm-hmm.
that statute that were assailable and are going to be struck. I'm telling you now, you heard it here first. You know, that it's not going to stand. Okay. It's just not going to stand. That law clearly, the anti-protest law, was designed to have a chilling effect on people who would otherwise voice their opinions about the laws in place, the candidates who are running for office, who would get together and as a unified group walk and march and stand and in unity talk about some of the things that are important to all of us. That is an age-old protected right that you just cannot legislate and take away from people. The right to talk and the right to be
mm-hmm.
together when you are talking, the strength in unity so that you can get together in force and move about. And it's never going to fly. So just because a law is passed, it certainly doesn't mean that the law is constitutional. And that's what's being looked at now, the constitutionality of that particular provision. But, you know, you're going to find lawyers who focus on each respective area. I've never found an attorney who does civil rights from soup to nuts. I just haven't. The area is so complex. It has so many nuances. And, you really have to concentrate on one or two areas within the civil rights field, and that just has to be your bailiwick. But I hope I've answered your question about, you know, what it means when people begin to address, quote, my civil rights, unquote.
Mm-hmm. So when you get pitched a case, so to speak, in terms of, like you said, somebody said, well, my civil rights are violated. How many of those cases do you actually take seriously, or how many of them are really cases that you can either take or pass along to a colleague because it's maybe not in your wheelhouse?
I take all of the inquiries serious, and the ones that I am not able to give assistance for during my practice, I refer all of them out. When I say I refer all of them out, I don't stop a person from getting an answer. I'm not able to give an answer for all of them, but I think everyone deserves an answer. So I have like a little black book, so to speak, of lawyers who specialize in all of the civil rights areas. And I will give that person the phone number and the name of the attorney. And oftentimes I'll even send the attorney an email to let them know that I've given their name and number out so that they expect a phone call. It's important, I think, for people to be heard and to get an answer. You know, now a lot of folks won't get representation, but it doesn't mean that they won't be afforded a conversation.
Okay. So what made you select this particular area of civil rights law?
Thank you for asking. You know, that's a question that I actually love to answer when put to me. I was a criminal defense attorney, and I still am. Did nothing but public defender work for a while, and then I opened up my office and became a criminal defense practitioner, doing a lot of trial work. And I noticed that the motions which were granted, or the verdicts which were favorable for my clients, did not deter some of the recurring things that I would see, such as, everyone, quote, falling, unquote, all my clients seem to have a split scalp, that I'm thinking that nobody, can walk. Everybody falls and hits their head. Or there, for example, were instances, and there still are, of searches which were unconstitutional. I'd file a Fourth Amendment motion to suppress the evidence, and the evidence would get tossed out, and therefore the case. But the same officer would come back again, like a dirty stain on the carpet. Over and over again, I just kept seeing these injustices, and I just kept dealing with the same officers and the same issues, and it just didn't feel like I was getting anywhere. You know, it's like cutting your grass every week. You know, when I come back like a week later, the grass is growing again. It's like, what am I going to do? So I began to sue these guys. I began to look at ways that were more meaningful, that would stop the grass from growing for a while. And in some instances, it would eliminate the weeds altogether, even if the grass would continue to grow. So I went to a couple of seminars. And I dealt with a couple of practitioners who I admired in the community, who were, I call, my mentors, and they were working in the police liability field. And I thought, what a fantastic combination the criminal defense and plaintiff's civil rights, particularly police liability. You know, as a criminal defense lawyer, you know, I know where the holes are. I speak the language. I know who the police officers are. I know what the policies consist of. I know criminal procedure. I know substantive criminal law. So you can't come in there and dupe me. You know, when I'm looking at a report, I know where to go for the supplement. I know how to cross-examine police officers. I know how to depose police officers. And you know, ultimately, when you mess with someone's paycheck or when you mess with the city's coffers, the game gets changed. That changes the game because, you know, when there's a settlement for a substantial amount of money, the city officials begin to see what caused that. The same officer is the reason for the payout. There are going to be policy changes or there are going to be personnel changes. It just felt more meaningful, and it is more meaningful, and I can do so much more in the civil rights area than in the criminal defense area. The rules of procedure are the same rules of procedure that a tort lawyer in negligence operates from in the civil rights area. When you deal with criminal defense, the rules are very limited. For example, the depositions are not afforded to a criminal defendant in a federal criminal case. A defendant in a federal criminal case is not given the opportunity to depose any witness pretrial unless there is substantial good cause and a district court judge orders that. Well, in a civil rights case under 1983, when I file a complaint, or which is basically a lawsuit, I'm able to take the deposition of that same officer who I could never depose in the criminal case, which might have preceded my civil rights cases. You know, I'm looked at differently. You know, when I am a plaintiff's lawyer and I'm standing in front of a jury talking about what this officer has done, as opposed to standing up in a criminal court and explaining, you know, why my client didn't do something. So, you know, I just the tables turn, G, which were to my clients and to my office's benefit, and I'm able to get a lot more progress in the civil rights arena.
Good to know. You good know. To hear. Great decision on your
hey,
part.
Hey, let me tell you about something, by the way, too. I've got a case right now with a fella who,
right.
When he was, you know, he's facing right now a evidentiary motion when he was a teenager. And by the way, he's an adult now. He's you know, well into his 40s. Mm-hmm. When he was a teenager, he was convicted of sexual battery. And this is one of those cases where there were multiple defendants. And ultimately, in his particular case, he was convicted as a teenager, and he was sentenced to 22 years in prison. Mm-hmm. And he was able to, on his own, file a motion to correct that illegal sentence. And the sentence was then reduced to 17 years. And since that time, there was a development, and it was a DNA development, which showed that whatever DNA was being utilized to pin him to the crime was mm-hmm. not his DNA. It was not his DNA. Now, you know, the fella, his name is Rufus Mitchell, and he is a person who has been tenacious and just won't say no so loudly until the Innocence Project picked his case up and filed their own motion along with his pro se motion, and the case is now pending here in Palm Beach County. How I get involved is that the prosecution in the case, because he filed a motion to attack his convictions, they arrested him recently, saying that, well, your motion represents perjury from your earlier testimony in 1987. So therefore, you know, we're going to prosecute you today for your statements in your present motion. Now, what I'm saying might sound a little convoluted and difficult to apprehend, but essentially what I'm getting at is that here is a prosecution against a man who has clearly gotten the benefit of DNA that was not his, and the prosecution threatens to scare him from moving forward for further exoneration. So we're fighting for this guy right now to defend him against the prosecution, which has this chilling effect on everything else that he's doing. So I just wanted to talk about that. I'm gonna catch you up on that later. But that is something that I think he deserves some attention for. Mm-hmm. And if any practitioners are listening or anyone is interested in kind of tuning in to what happens next, you can follow it at my.com. You'll be able to look at the pleadings. You'll be able to actually see the movement on a month-to-month basis. So go ahead, G. You were going to ask me something before I
No, I wasn't. That, okay. I know you okay. wanted oh. to talk about this case, and I just didn't know how much of it you could talk about because, you know, it's, I guess, ongoing or evolved, you know. But, I mean, how often does that happen when they use, I guess, one law to kind of, you know, you think you're home free, and then all of a sudden they're coming back at you to kind of shut you down with some trumped up charges.
I think it happens a lot. You know, we talked about Allen Iverson's case. In his case, the law that they convicted him for was actually a law which was designed to protect black people after the Civil War from being lynched. It was called, and the law was the type of law which criminalized people from standing around watching black people being lynched. So they used that same law to convict him for the incident which happened at the bowling alley, and being just present without participating under that law would have resulted in a conviction back then when it was created, and today as it was applied, or at the time when it was applied to Allen Iverson. And ultimately the law was, his particular conviction was overturned. So, but it happens a lot, G. You get that. You get the wielding of the law in the wrong direction often. And it's guys like me who have to recognize that it's being wielded improperly, and we have to stand up and cogently and professionally and articulately and strategically defend our clients against the misutilization of those laws.
So let me ask you this. You're working on this case. I'm trying to find information on this case. I found the link you were talking about for the mypalmbeachclerk.com, so I have posted that on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. Why can't I find any information on this young man and his case? Is no one paying attention? No one covering it?
Oh, that's right. You can't. You're saying in the public social media
yeah.
or like just like internet search? Yeah. No one's covering it because they didn't hear from me yet. You know, and they haven't heard from you. But how do you like that? That's why nobody's covering it. You know, but I'll tell you what. The case number is 1987 CF2233, and his name is Rufus Mitchell with two L's. Quite an interesting
okay.
case. Quite an interesting
right.
case. So. There
and I know
you're
going to send me some
there.
Stuff on this, right?
I will send you a ton of stuff on this. It's a very interesting case. I'll send you the police report. I'll send you, you know, the motion from the Innocence Project as well.
Okay. All right. Because, I'm not getting anything on it. So I need some stuff. I need some
okay.
stuff to post because he needs some attention. This is wrong. So now, what do we need to keep our eyes on, I guess, for the rest of the year in terms of what cases do you see getting more attention over the next few months. Is the Aubrey case going to be one of those, or is it, are we still going to just get dribs and drabs with that? I mean, now that they charged.
Aubrey's definitely going to be one of those cases where you're going to hear probably these guys may have the audacity to go to trial, and I just can't really see what the defense would be, but I think that they have the audacity to go to trial on a case like that for some strange reason. You've got
I feel bad for the poor dog. I'm sorry. But the Nikita Brown case, and I keep looking at the video, and, I mean, seriously, I don't understand. I don't know if she said something to him that ticked him off or what, but still, you know, I mean, the dog just about gets trampled on and choked in the whole process of this guy, this officer trying to. And she said there were four young white guys that were behind her, and he didn't say anything to them about being in this park after hours or anything like that. So.
Which is in and of itself surprising, and I bet you those guys some of the activity, because they had to see this debacle, you know, with with the officer and Miss Brown. But the Aaron Bowman case out of Louisiana. Where the fella was being beaten with a flashlight on video, and, you know, the officer comes back and says, the trooper comes back and says, you know, I really educated this guy. You know, they beat the hell out of him. And I think I sent you a link on that one. And then that's the case you want to watch. And then once again, another Louisiana case involving the fella that was tased earlier in the year repeatedly after the motor vehicle pursuit, that too was on video. I think we need to watch that one too. That's getting ready to, that may not happen. You may not see anything on that until probably like mid spring or something like that on the case. And then I believe it was a Colorado case where the police were actually indicted. Let's see, this was, the fellow, it was a pistol whipping. If you recall, like I believe they choked this young man, and they pistol whipped him in Colorado, it was published in July. Came out of, I believe, Aurora, Colorado. The officer's name was John Hallberg, and there was a video showing him pistol whipping a person and choking the individual and threatening to kill him, right? And then there was also a second officer that failed to stop what was taking place as is required under that particular state's law. There's video footage of the activity that happened. So, this Denver suburb, is they're under fire right now because the 2018 death of a fellow by the name of Elijah McClain, that case is still out there, if you remember that one. And so, you know, they're on ice. So those two cases are out there too. So, but I've got a whole bunch of cases that I'm watching, and I should just send you my, I have a checklist here, you know, I have a matrix of the cases that I'm watching big time, you know, and I'm actively on Twitter, so I'm catching feeds from a lot of practitioners who are out there, like, you know, making noise.
Yeah. Kevin, got to run. Thank you, though. Appreciate the time today, because I know you're a busy man.
Thank you.
But, keep us posted. Please come back soon, okay?
I will. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Kevin Anderson, be well. And thank you all for listening. This has been D's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed. Join us next week. We have our Tech Thursday, Friday in the Garden, and our Hair Care Hotline, among other things, so don't miss it. Have a wonderful weekend, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care. We'll be right back.
make it all right.